the first degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
The first degree.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
I think that's one of the things that came out in his confession. He was very much messing with how he empathized with creatures. He would go on these nightly drives, and they all thought that he was just like going for a stroll in the town and clearing his head and that kind of thing. And then he goes into the confession and tells the police that he's been going out at night and taking pot shots at cows and businesses and things like that.
Hey guys, welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter and next to Billy Jensen. Do I usually do it in that order?
Yep.
Oh, it felt weird. Nope.
It's exactly what you do.
It's exactly
every
what
time.
You do.
Okay, so I'm going clockwise.
Yep.
Before we start off today, we are going to be at CrimeCon. Yeah. I don't know if we've actually announced it yet.
No, we haven't.
Here is your announcement. And if you guys want 10% off your passes, use our code DEGREE2020.
And we're also doing a live show.
Okay, I didn't know if we could say it or not yet.
I think we can.
Yeah.
Have you signed your contracts yet?
Yep.
Okay.
We signed them.
They're signed.
Now we just have to pick the case.
I forged Jack's signature.
Ah.
No, I actually signed it myself.
Oh. But in the past, I've signed Jack's signature.
That is true.
Like, I need to get this thing in, and I know her signature.
Well, I guess we're still trying to figure out what case we're doing. So if anybody from Florida
has a good case,
has a great case, or knows somebody who knows somebody that could be a great first-degree connection, we're still trying to
pick a case that's geographically relevant.
Yes, we have one that is a possibility. That's a really good case, but we're on the lookout for some other ones.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, what day is it, Billy?
It's National Carnival Day.
I knew you were going to pick that
one. Of course I'm going to pick that. Carnival games, we had a first degree meeting, if you remember, last week.
Uh-huh.
I left that meeting and went straight to Universal Studios, bought a ticket, walked in, and then won some carnival games there in the Simpsons land.
Well, that's enough of that. So let's turn down the lights.
And turn up your anxiety.
Because this could be you.
In our modern world, we watch YouTube videos almost every day, reviewing the perfect strangers, give makeup advice, unbox clothes, comments on movies, you name it, YouTube's got it. YouTube changed the game, allowing anyone with a computer the ability to become a star. And we know very little about these YouTube personalities. Most of them are just ordinary people, but some of them have a dark side, just like a percentage of every type of person there is. Do you think you could tell when you were watching a random YouTube video? Do you think you could spot a killer if you saw one?
Today's case takes us back to March of 2014. The Grand Budapest Hotel and 300 Rise of an Empire were in theaters, and Maroon 5's Love Somebody and Lords Royals were on the radio.
And the setting of today's story is, well, it's actually two settings. The first is Waller, Texas, and the second is the internet, YouTube to be exact.
Correct. And this story revolves around the Sessler family. Lawton and Rhonda Sessler had been married for 34 years. Lawton was a respected teacher, and he worked at the nearby elementary school, and neighbors describe this couple basically as being very private, but a couple that loved to decorate for Christmas and for Halloween. And Rhonda was described as one of those quintessential moms. Loved to be there, drive to soccer practice, show up with lemonade, show up with cookies, all of that sort of thing. And Rhonda worked for the local newspaper, and her colleagues described her as being this phenomenal writer and having this big, memorable laugh. So Rhonda and Lawton had two children, two boys, Mark and Trey. And most of the people who knew this family described Mark and Trey as just being like these perfect sons with this perfect upbringing. Very all-American, very normal, very ordinary.
And to get a better idea of Trey, the youngest of the two boys, here's what he had to say of himself on his Facebook profile. He says, "Welcome to the House of Fun. I'm Trey. No nicknames or anything. I really like to take it easy and have a nice time. I'm really interested in my education as a college student, and I'm really excited about graduating in a few years. I plant things sometimes in the spring, like peppers and strawberries. My car is currently the most exciting part of my days. Pleased to meet you, though. Take it easy."
Trey Sessler was obsessed with anime. And he made an amateur career out of doing online video reviews, which he had been doing for more than 5 years.
And he called himself Mr. Anime, great name, which became his internet persona, because a great deal of the videos focused on reviewing anime cartoons. And you can see the videos, which he called Mr. Anime Reviews, on YouTube, shot for his Lenscap Productions. And it's the same kind of videos of, if you guys have ever heard of that, I think he's like a 7-year-old kid that unpackages and reviews toys,
yep,
who makes $20 million a year and makes everybody feel like shit about their lives. He does the same thing, but he's kind of watching an anime TV show or whatever, yeah, and then talking about it, reviewing it.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's kind of positioned himself as an expert.
Yes.
And people do it with gadgets. People do it with tech. People do it with, like, hey.
With anything that you can think of, there's going to be somebody that's reviewing it on YouTube. And he happens to be Mr. Anime.
Exactly. Yes.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mr. Anime, and boy, do I have a show for you.
Hello, Mr. Anime.
Hey, what's up?
I have wonderful news.
Really?
You've reached 2,000 subscribers.
2,000 subscribers?
Yeah, I bet he's here to get our money.
But he ain't getting it. Yeah!
Trey was very dedicated to this YouTube channel.
And these videos were a family affair, and Trey's brother Mark and his mother Rhonda often made cameos in the videos. But Trey's videos had a little something extra than just someone talking about Full Metal Alchemist or Attack on Titan. He often held guns in his hands and pointed them at the camera as he made his reviews. Real guns. And there are about 323 videos, and they have all been viewed more than a million times. So what do they tell us about Trey Sessler?
Yes, because I think what we're going to realize throughout this episode is that Trey Sessler is a complex character. It's those who knew him, and, I mean, he has a persona online as well. So to paint an even better picture of Trey, here's one of his friends from high school, and his name is Wes.
Me and Trey met in high school. He was a year younger than me. We were both in bands, so we spent a pretty good amount of time together. As far as Trey as a person, he was always kind of goofy in a silly way. I always thought he was a little weird. Of course, at the time, most of us were pretty weird, so it's not anything special, but he was definitely one of the stranger people I knew. He had kind of a flat stare, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, it always felt like he was kind of just looking through you. I know, you know, we were both into anime and role-playing games and all the real good nerd hobbies. I wouldn't say he was popular. He wasn't really a loner. Like, he wasn't by himself. He had a good little circle of friends. But he definitely wasn't, you know, like the crowd pleaser or anywhere near the top of the, you know, food chain. We would get together to play Dungeons and Dragons, and Trey would come over because he was, you know, also part of that group, and we'd play together that way.
Now, Dungeons and Dragons, if you're playing with the dice around a table, it's a very communal game. And you see a lot of talk about gamers that are sitting behind screens, and psychiatrists and psychologists feel that they're being alienated from some point of human experience that they feel is essential.
Wait,
because
why?
They're doing that. Oh, because they're sitting behind screens and they're not interacting with people.
So it's just like, so for someone like me who's never done a video game,
mm-hmm,
is Dungeons and Dragons a video game?
It's a card game, isn't it?
No, it's not a card game. It's a game where you're sitting around, you have a dungeon master, you have characters, and somebody is saying, okay, you just walked into a cave, you're encountering a troll, what do you do?
But what's
you
it?
Want to roll your dice.
Oh.
And then you
so
write
it's
down.
Not so a video game.
But not a card game. So it's played in your head.
So yeah.
It's you're speaking.
There's a lot of rules. Yes. And
it's theatrical.
It's pretty, yeah, actually. And it's not like a video game where it's, Yeah, with video games, you can be a little bit communal and get together with people, but a lot of it is now spent with one person in their
room.
You're
behind a screen. At least Dungeons and Dragons is communal. At least you have face-to-face communication with each other.
And I actually played it once in high school, and I had an amazing time. I don't know why I played it just once. My mom put out Doritos. I remember that for some reason. We did it in my living room. And then I never played it again. And I would like to play it again. And my son actually plays, and he's a dungeon master. And I was like,
What does a dungeon master mean?
He's the guy that's he's the game master. He's like the head of the group. And he tells people like, okay, you rolled this, you're going to die, you did this. Yeah. And I asked him, I said, can I join your crew? And he said, no.
Yeah, because you're like, you're the embarrassing cool dad.
I'd be the embarrassing dad, but I'm kind of a cool dad though.
No,
but the coolest dad is still not a cool dad.
You're still the dad.
You're still a dad.
All right, so let's get back to the story. So while Trey was into battle axes and long swords and crossbows of the D&D fantasy, he was also very much into weapons in the real world, mainly guns.
Oh, how you doing, everyone? It's Mr. Anime. Or you can call me Trey. You can call me the guy that does the video game reviews. You can call me the guy that does all the gun stuff now. What I have here today to show you is a High Point. Now, for those of you that are familiar with High Point, you might have a very low opinion of them, or you might have a high opinion of them. I think they're pretty decent, especially for the price. I have here a very classic 9.95. It shoots 9mm rounds. 10-round magazine comes standard with it. And you can also buy an optional 15-round magazine. But you know, I like really big clips, so I wish it came with like a 50. Okay, so there's this old couch always under this bridge. Basically, what I'm gonna do is blow up the couch to the best of my 9mm abilities. So let's see what we can do.
So the question here is, outwardly, what do these videos of Trey and his fascination with guns tell us about Trey?
It's Texas. Everyone's got guns. Most of us have more than one. Like, him having guns really isn't a huge red flag. Even among my more like left-leaning friends, pretty much everybody I know has at least one gun, even if it's just to like take it to the range and play with it every once in a while. It's my understanding that he had acquired quite a few of them. Whereas in high school, I want to say that the only one he really had was like a rifle his dad had given him or something to that effect.
So maybe the fact that Trey was using guns in his videos wasn't that glaring of a red flag to people. But Trey's channel had hundreds of videos, and it started with simply just reviews about anime. As time went on, he seemed to slant more and more towards just being fixated on violence and incorporating violence into these videos and less about anime. So this presents a question. What does this reveal, if anything, about a potential shift within Trey while this is happening?
Then in early March 2012, Trey made a couple of strange phone calls to the police. And on the first one, he told them that he had just felt a bullet whiz past his head, which is weird. And a week later, he called up and he asked an officer, a guy named Michael Mathis, who actually went to school with his brother Mark, if it was legal for a civilian to own a bulletproof vest. Again, weird.
Billy's right. It's weird, but not a huge cause for alarm. Relatively innocuous. But that wouldn't be the case the next time the police were called to the Sessler home.
A week later, that same officer, Michael Mathis, got a 911 call and walked into the Sessler's ranch-style house.
911, where's your emergency? I don't know if somebody around here just starts shooting for no reason.
The scene was a thing of nightmares. The house looked like a war zone. There was blood everywhere. Everything was shattered, splintered, broken, and ransacked. Trey's mom Rhonda's body was found in the garage. His father Lawton was found in the master bedroom. Officer Mathis recognized his former classmate Mark Sessler dead in the bathroom.
And more chilling, there were eerie messages scribbled and carved into the walls of this home. It was done with carvings, like I said, and black marker. And the carving said, "Why did I do this? And I love my mom and dad, and my brother. And God forgive me because I cannot forgive myself.
So immediately because of these messages, the police knew who they were looking for as their main suspect. It was Trey.
And it wasn't long before news of what had happened hit the media.
I was at work and I get a call from a friend of mine and he's like, hey, do you remember Trey Sessler? I said, yeah, of course. I used to play D&D with him. And he goes, well, you should stop whatever you're doing right now and go Google his name. And so I did. And lo and behold, there's three or four news articles. Well, at first it was just there was a murder at his house and that he was the prime suspect and he'd been arrested. And then pretty quickly, it, you know, the news came out that it was him and that he had, you know, scribbled all the stuff on the walls that made it really obvious that he was the one that did it.
All this news is reaching Trey's friends and people he knows, and nobody knows where he is.
So the big question was no longer who, it was where. Where is Trey? And then later, why?
Facebook was completely ablaze with all the news, and so I was getting constant phone call updates from friends. The rumor mill got started, and everybody was talking, and so about once a day, I'd get a call from somebody going, okay, here's the scoop, and they'd, you know, tell me all the new information.
So it turns out, after Trey committed this horrible crime, and he ransacked and destroyed his home, he got in his car, he loaded his car up with all of his guns and ammunition, and he drove down to the nearest junior high school. And he sat there in his car. And by now we know that the police knew who they were looking for. They were able to obtain information about Trey's car and they tracked him down. And they located him in this vehicle sitting in the parking lot of the school. And he was taken into custody by the Texas Rangers, federal marshals, and Brazoria County SWAT officers.
Once police had Trey in the interrogation room, he was shockingly candid about what he had done during his 8-hour interview.
So Trey's interrogation was recorded, and apologies in advance for the poor audio quality, but we will clean it up best we can.
The thing about my family is I would protect them with my life. At the same time, if anyone was going to hurt them, it was going to be me.
We're fully aware that the audio is not the best, so I'm going to repeat what Trey just said during his interrogation. He said, the thing is about my family is that I would protect them with my life. But if anyone was going to hurt them, it was going to be me. Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't. And the real world makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For the real real, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The RealReal has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
He horrified police when he started elaborating on his multi-prong plan. Trey told them that he called his mother into the garage, saying that he needed help with one of his videos.
And I fired about 4 times. And I don't know where she gets hit, but I know it's somewhere towards her area.
When she walked in, he shot her 4 times with a shotgun. Mark heard the shots and went to investigate.
So what Trey is saying here is basically he decided on a whim to do this to his mother, and Once he did that, he had to double down. I couldn't go explain to my brother Mark or my dad what I'd just done. So here I am. I'm going to go all in.
Trey actually walked past his brother to go get his pistol from his room. And then he turned around and shot Mark.
And my brother's lying there in this big pile of blood. It was terrifying. It's just a bad sight. And I was like, okay. I guess that got in. He kind of gets up half asleep. You know, he's like, oh, you know, what's going on. So I run in there. I shoot at him a couple times.
Then Trey went into the bedroom where his father was sleeping and shot him.
Then Trey made the rounds around the house, revisiting his wounded family members and delivered what he described as quote unquote mercy shots to make sure nobody was still alive or suffering.
I don't want anyone to be suffering, laying on the floor for hours, moaning and groaning.
But why? Why did he kill his entire family? Trey said that he killed his family because he was planning a Columbine-type shooting and didn't want them to have to face it. And his goal? It was to kill at least 70 people, and he had been planning this for years.
The school Trey planned to shoot up was the local middle school.
And I'm like, there's my opportunity. Go ahead, go get him. Right after I had killed the family, it was on my mind to do that. And I was thinking, well, you know, I could creep across the field and open up on the home stands and probably cause more mayhem with people trying to get away. I don't think a period of 2 or 3 days ever went by that I didn't think about some sort of violent act. Or they were the first immediate human targets in my sight. And if I was going to go out and do anything, they would have to go.
In case you missed that, in reference to his parents, Trey said, they were the first human targets I encountered. And if I was going to go out and do anything, and he's obviously referencing a school shooting or a massacre, a mass killing of some kind, the family had to be the first to go. And there was more that came out across the span of Trey's 8-hour confession. He had committed a number of crimes in the months leading up to this triple homicide. So it turns out he was exhibiting classic escalation. And nothing's classic. I mean, everybody's unique in people's weird path to committing such horrible crimes. They're all different. But he was doing things that we know killers are to do.
I think that's one of the things that came out in his confession. He was very much messing with how he empathized with creatures. He would go on these nightly drives and they all thought that he was just like going for a stroll in the town and clearing his head and that kind of thing. And then he goes into the confession and tells the police that he's been going out at night and taking pot shots at cows and businesses and things like that and doing it so that nobody would find out it was him. So I honestly don't think that anybody knew. There was a story somewhere that he had come home to his kitten right after a bad day of work, and the kitten was like trying to come up to him, and he was kicking it away and it wouldn't stop. And so finally he just grabbed a shotgun and shot it. And so, you know, total cold, calculated, whatever. And then the next day he buries it in the backyard and puts a note about how he's so sorry and blah, blah, blah. So I think that he was, at that point, he was trying to maybe even cure himself of his empathy. Like, you know, maybe if he thought he could do it long enough, maybe he'd get rid of that.
So this confession obviously is confusing because he is very matter of fact. He seems to show genuine remorse in others. And it's kind of similar to his pattern with cruelty to animals, where he's like, one second, he's shooting cows from his car, and the next he's crying and remorseful. And I think he's just exhibiting some very similar patterns here. So you have to remember, at this time, members of the community had known about the triple homicide. That hit the news. But slowly, information about what Trey had been planning also hit the news and reached the ears of people who knew him.
That's terrifying. I don't think he was planning on actually going to the school, but homecoming was supposed to be soon, and I He had three plans, and one of them, I believe, was to basically drive his car into the crowds at homecoming and open fire. And my little brother was going to be at the homecoming game. So, yeah, I mean, it's terrifying. Kind of a shock, you know, somebody that I knew and used to hang out with is planning to do something that could have very well gotten a lot of people, including my own family members, killed. So, yeah, that's awful.
People are shocked by this news, so presumably they didn't believe Trey was capable of something like this. And this is where we throw in something sort of perplexing. So listen to this.
And in fact, there's even a YouTube video that he made a while ago of him talking about how awful it is that all these school shootings are happening everywhere.
And we found that YouTube video.
Hey, everybody. And today I'm running on something a little bit... Right? Yes, I'm ranting on something a little bit anime unrelated. I'm ranting on all the shootings that have been happening. Pittsburgh, New York, Alabama, California. It's like every day I get online and click open Yahoo or whatever I open and let the publicity fill my mind with bad thoughts about the place I live. So, I don't know what's going on. You know, they had an article that were like, well... The economy's gone bad. Everyone's losing their job and getting mad and shooting everybody. Yeah, I guess that makes sense since a lot of the shooters lately have recently lost their job. But I'm a firearms owner myself, but it is a little bit disturbing to know that you could be a victim in something like this at these times. All the people that were victims, you think it won't happen to me, but sometimes it does. But seriously, every day I open Yahoo, I'm like, well, time to see what today's shooting is, and hey, there's another one. So I don't know when it's gonna stop. I think it's why, but what can I say? So with that, just making everyone aware, if no one has heard about it, look, you can look it up. But very frequently in the news. I'm sure it does happen. I live close to Houston, and, you know, it's Houston. It's a huge city. There's shootings every day, but the mass shootings lately, I don't know. But, yes, thank you for watching, and I will see you later.
So Trey's position on mass shootings at a certain point really confuses the why of all of this. But one of the biggest questions is, Trey was sitting out front of this junior high school. He had a car full of loaded weapons. Why didn't he go through with it? And thank goodness he didn't. But why didn't he? Well, here is the only explanation he could offer.
I don't know. Maybe it was just... maybe it's just what happened was too real.
He is known on YouTube as Mr. Anime, this self-styled film critic whose videos have been watched more than a million times. But Trey Sessler is much more than a student of Japanese-style animation. According to police in Texas, this guy studied murder before becoming a mass killer. The 22-year-old is now in jail under $5 million bond and a suicide watch.
He further admitted to investigators that he studied serial killers to the point of grading their work and researching mass shootings in public areas that included, but not limited to, the Columbine shooting incident. He had thoughts of committing some act of public violence, such as these.
It's clear to everyone connected to this case, including the police, that Trey is actually quite a multifaceted character. And who he was differed solely on who you asked. The police believe him to be a textbook psychopath, a guy who loved to read about serial killers, a guy who was fascinated with violence and obsessed with gruesome movies and video games. But others who knew him described him as incredibly smart, a little quirky, but generally pretty nice. Some said that Trey was obsessed with making his movies and he sort of lived through them. And some referred to him as a dangerous guy who loved guns. But what I know, and I don't need to know Trey to know this, is that he's a confessed triple murderer of his own family members. Innocent family members that supported him in his endeavors and in dreams and passions. But how did he become a triple murderer and why?
I do think he was mentally ill. They found a text message on his mom's phone where he had texted her requesting her to make an appointment with his psychologist ASAP. And that was 6 days before it happened. And then there was also a sticky note in the house that they found that his mom had written him saying that they couldn't refill his prescription until October or something because they could only do it every 30 days. So, you know, he was obviously being psychologically cared for some kind of issues, but it wasn't talked about with anyone as far as I know. I really do think that he thought he was a good person and he tried to be a good person. I genuinely think that he just has like a psychotic break.
Sessler pleaded guilty to capital murder and is serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole. He has also waived his rights to any appeal. In fact, he stated that he wants to be behind bars. It seems that he feels relieved by that in some fashion.
This is so sad and disturbing and bizarre on so many different levels. Yeah. It really is.
It said that Trey Sessler felt remorse, pleaded guilty, and wanted to be sent to prison and really was going to accept his punishment as the person who murdered his family. How did this happen? Why did this happen? We may never know. What we do know is that there's a prevalence of these kind of things happening in our country all the time. And there's a lot of arguments about what the catalyst for these types of crimes are. And I think it's a very complicated answer. All we can try to do is look out for the red flags, look out for each other, try to be as healthy as we can, try to encourage others to do the same while being hypervigilant about your surroundings and the people around you. That's all we ask. That's all we can do because it's a big, scary world out there and we can't control everything. We want to thank Wes for being our First Degree Connection tonight. You were the best.
Follow us on Instagram at The First Degree, at Billy Jensen, at Alexis Linkletter, at Jack Vanek. Join our Facebook group. We're talking a lot of true crime. Go get some merch and don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.
And remember, only you can prevent serial killers and keep your friends close.
But not that close. Sources for today's episode includes Texas Monthly, YouTube, The Houston Press, KHOU 11 News, ABC, CBS, court documents, and as always, our First Degree Connections are always our largest source.
All right, welcome to another episode of
Killing Time.
I kind of talked over your thus, so I don't even think it really went through.
It's never going to get old for me.
No. Well, it has gotten old for me probably since the second episode that we did.
I know, but yeah, I've been saying things that have been bothering you for a long time.
What?
I've been saying things that have been bothering you for many years
now. You double down on annoying phrases and you don't stop.
Including double down.
I say double down all the time.
A culinary tour.
That's what I was thinking of when I said that.
Yeah. Alexis and I went to Coachella, I don't know, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And she wanted to go on a culinary tour because it was the first year that they actually had good food that wasn't these food trucks. It wasn't like fried chicken tendies.
And I was like, let's get something from every food truck. And they were all places, like cultures from around the world. And I was like, let's go on a culinary tour. And she was like, fuck you. The entire time she hated it. We got drunk
and she would not stop saying it.
I wanted an empanada. I wanted a sushi burrito. I wanted fries. Yep.
I wanted a schnitzel. I enjoy
you know what?
A culinary tour.
You know what, though?
But you don't want me to say it.
When we go to Orlando for CrimeCon and we go to Epcot, we will go on a culinary tour of around the world.
We will. You know what? I'm not really looking forward. I'm looking forward to the experience. I'm not looking forward to the drinks. I don't like a cocktail, really, at all. Especially one from Disneyland.
Do they have like, you can't just get a vodka soda or something?
Of course you could. Yeah,
that's not the point. So if you're going to Mexico, you get a margarita. If you go to Japan, you get sake.
You don't want to mix.
I just want photo ops.
Yeah, same.
You just don't want to do for the gram. All right.
I mean, I'm not the gram person here, but I'm like,
I will do it for the gram, but I also don't want any of the cocktails.
No, you'll get a headache.
Unless it was like, in Mexico, take a shot of tequila. I can do that.
Shots?
Shots.
All about it.
Yes.
All right. We'll figure it out. And if
I have a feeling they don't give you shots at Epcot.
Do you know what? If anybody has, I'm sure some firsties out there have done this before.
Yeah.
Drinking in Epcot in the World Showcase. We want to do the Around the World. Mm-hmm. Not that. It's something different. It's at Disney. And then we would like to hear from you as far as what you drank, if anybody had done it before.
Yeah. And is it like, I envision just sugary cocktails with no alcohol in them. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel like they will be.
It's like my old nightmare about the Moscato.
Yes.
Like the worst case scenario.
That's how I feel. It's going to be like a barefoot.
Cannot.
Nope. Like value no. of, yes.
No. For the first time in our friendship, I got a bottle of Prosecco and we didn't drink it because it was barefoot.
It was barefoot.
Sorry, barefoot.
And you know what?
Don't do Prosecco. Do your sparkling dry champagne. That's fine. Prosecco's not your bag. You're an American company. Just let it go.
Nothing is Barefoot's bag because their wines are like $3 a bottle.
No, I mean, their other stuff. They're champagne if you're doing like,
that's
I don't
not
know.
Good. Anyways.
I'm here for you, Barefoot.
We love like, you,
we're
Barefoot.
We're not trying to knock you.
Okay. So we're still answering some questions. Alexis is going to lead this one because she picked some questions out of the Facebook group.
I'm going to lead this one.
Okay.
All right. So this is from Tony Bonnie. B-O-N-I.
Tony Boney.
Tony Boney.
Ooh.
Tony Boney. Would you rather know the day and time of your death or the cause of your death?
Wow.
And we're assuming this means right now. What would you rather know which one?
I think it would be cause. I think if you knew the day and time of your death, you would live in constant anxiety of your clock.
Yeah,
down.
But if you knew absolutely there was no way to change it, then you would know how to spend money.
Yeah.
You know, you would know how to budget yourself.
But I think there's something about ignorance being bliss in this lifetime of not knowing. Question.
Okay. Is Tupac dead or is Tupac alive? Oh. And the question that precedes this, and I'm going to answer first.
Okay.
The first question is, what was your craziest experience with drugs? And the second is Tupac dead or is Tupac alive?
Well let's do one at a time.
No, they are the together. Same answer.
Okay.
So
did you have like a
Coachella? I smoked weed and weed wasn't legal, I don't think. And I wasn't a smoker or any of those things. But I smoked weed at Coachella the year they had the Tupac hologram. Yes.
Did we go to Coachella together that year?
No, I think it was Rita. I was with my best friend from home. Hey, Rita, she listens to this. So Rita and I, they all went to go see David Guetta. I think I was alone. I don't remember. But anyways, I just know that I was smoked weed and the Tupac hologram came on and I was like, I fucking knew it. He's alive. Cause it was
did you think he was real?
It was so realistic and we were all stoned.
Oh,
everybody
no.
was. Everyone thought it was real. Everyone thought it was him. I'm not even kidding. They thought it's like this was his back. He's
everyone.
Back.
I definitely did not. Think
Were you
it
there?
Was, yes.
Oh, why didn't I see you?
I don't know, but I definitely thought it was a hologram.
You did,
but I wasn't high.
There
so.
You go. Well, my drug
you probably
experience,
had better seats too.
You stand at Coachella, Billy.
She was in the VIP section. Okay, I've been to Coachella.
I have VIP
before.
Tickets.
Okay,
you've been to Coachella what year?
Yes.
When?
The year
probably
when,
the year that had good music.
No, it wasn't
it was like
good.
500 years. It was,
35
it was,
years.
It was. Yeah. Oh no, wait, that was Woodstock. Sorry. No, it was Muse and Gorillaz.
I was there that year too. Mm-hmm.
See, Coachella lineup sucks these days.
Rage though, we got Rage.
We're
this
still
year.
Going. Yeah,
still see going. You don't watch the music anyways anymore, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're going to Coachella. Anyways. What about your drug thing?
Oh, my drug thing? I once took an edible. And
that never ends well.
But here's the thing, though. So I had a cookie, right? And I took like probably an eighth of the cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never know where the THC is going to be in the cookie, you know, yeah. So, and they're
is
not
it
regulated.
The chocolate chips?
Edibles
is it the
are, they're really, they can do anything.
They're yeah. really crazy.
Not for me.
And then like I was, yeah, it just had a bad trip and was out for the whole night.
I have a good, I just
under
remember
my, under my covers and being scared under my covers.
I smoked weed. No, you weren't there. This was maybe when I was 22 years old. I smoked weed at the Rainbow Room.
Are you sure it wasn't there?
In, yes, in LA. The Rainbow Room's right next to the Key Club. It's a very famous restaurant. A lot of rock stars would go there.
Lemmy used to hang out there at the bar.
Who?
Who's Lemmy?
Lemmy from Motorhead.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Lemmy.
I actually know who that is, surprisingly. Yeah. And I smoked weed with Cypress Hill. It was a blunt. again, this is when I was like in my early 20s. I still can't smoke weed, but I smoked a blunt and then I had an out of body experience where I lifted up into the sky and overlooked myself from the top of the bar.
Watching Cypress Hill.
Watching. No, I
was with Cypress Hill.
I wasn't. Yeah. They were
you
just
were smoking.
I
with
somehow
them.
Ended up hanging out with them.
That's
and smoked
so awesome.
Weed with them and then had an out of body experience and then was watching myself from like 15 feet above.
I love that story.
It was not fun.
So you're saying you were insane?
Yes.
Insane.
In the membrane.
In the membrane.
Yes. Next question.
Like we did there. Life. Okay. If you had to join a famous cult in order to survive, which famous cult would you pick and why? And this is Marissa Martin.
Marissa Martin.
Marissa Martin. Oh, I didn't say these were all. Okay. These were the last three were all Marissa Martin.
Marissa, you've got some good questions.
Yeah,
these
Marissa,
are really
geez.
Good.
You really she, ran the gamut.
The Tupac one was hers. Yeah.
The Tupac
the drug
one was
experience
hers.
Was hers.
And the drug experience.
Sorry, Marissa.
That one. Wow.
Okay. What
Hold
cults
on,
would you guys join? Like a cult that, well, there's not many cults still around.
But no, but any of the famous ones, probably Jonestown.
Jesus.
In order, so you would not have to
survive.
Die, and you literally just pick the one that
it's
everybody
just, you
dies.
Had to pick one. Okay, just the one where it's like, what would I have been suckered into? The inclusive.
I know.
I love the inclusivity aspect in the
Jonestown. Oh, you mean like the
racially
racial diverse? Okay,
yeah. I just mean, what would I get coaxed into? The initial message is very appealing.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is like, there's no color. I mean, I think that's the thing in that I would, if I was going
to
get tricked into one. It's the nice one.
I would have joined the Source family because
no one died.
I loved it. Was still, well, no one died. I would have had a great survival rate.
I know.
That was probably the smart one to join. I would join the Source family because they all were white. They were very chic. They were very fashion forward. And they were ahead of their time with a nice vegan restaurant on Sunset Boulevard I would have liked to eat at.
You're so right.
I know.
You're so right.
Billy, what,
you're right.
What cult would you have joined?
You know what? Having studied cults.
New religious movements.
Thank you. You know what? Probably one of the, you know, the Shakers probably.
What's the Shake?
Yeah.
I don't
it's
know.
It's not really
that
big of a, I mean, are we talking about early cults, late
Any
cults?
Any cult. I just don't know what the Shakers were.
Oh, let's make furniture, you know, man. Just chilling out, making furniture.
Is it part of like Quakers?
Is it like the Beatnik
Quakers.
Movement?
Is a Quaker the same thing?
No, it was around, around the same area, but
no
the
one knows
Shakers,
what a Shaker is, so maybe you should tell people.
Well, you know what? The Shakers, just a Christian-based movement, and they made really, really good furniture that Oprah collects.
When was this?
I don't know. They're still around.
When did they make the furniture? Was it like mid-century furniture?
No. No, it's
he's half answering questions.
Artisan?
I'm confused.
Yes, it's like good, like artisan. Yeah, and now they yes.
What
and then
style is artisan to you?
Shaker,
rustic.
Do a search for Shaker furniture.
Shaker furniture. You're just not really answering the question.
Hang
I'm
on one
done
second.
Now. We're not going to Google Shaker furniture.
We're googling
about this.
Shaker furniture right now.
Time of death. We've how much time have we asked me, Jack? So like we can end this.
How much time have we killed, Alexis?
We've killed 12 minutes and 37 seconds of time. So
should we call it?
We're going to call it time of death. Time of death. No, it doesn't work because we don't have a time. It's
what do you mean we don't have a time?
12 minutes and 50 seconds.
Perfect.
It's not like.
Yeah, that's what we say.
All right.
Should we call it? Time of
death. 12 minutes and 57 seconds.